Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
And they're off. Three candidates just confirmed for the presidency. Maria Steen misses out, just two votes short of a start. Good afternoon, Malachy.
Good afternoon, John.
Thanks very much for joining us on Liveline. What do you think?
I think it's a sad day that that we don't have, a field of candidates that are more broadly based. You know, I think the political parties have stitched it up, and they're denying the electorate the decent choice of candidates.
You feel they're denied because you didn't have an independent candidate or Maria
exactly.
Steen or just another choice. You wanted to see more.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The basic issue is that they have stitched up the county councils and they have got their own people in, and to hell with anybody else who might have wanted to get a look in. And that's the whole sadness of it all. And I'm going to spoil my vote. I'm seriously thinking of spoiling my vote.
You're thinking of spoiling your vote?
Yes, I am.
And why would you do that?
As a protest.
Because Malachy, this is a democratic process. The political parties would reject your allegations.
It's not a democratic process. It's a process set up by the 1935 Constitution that's out of date. It doesn't permit the people of the country to have a proper choice. It's dictated solely by the political parties and their people. Independent people cannot get a look in. That's the problem.
You feel very strongly about this, Malachy, but
I feel denied, and I think this is why people have lost interest in the president as a position. The president's role is actually quite important. Represents the country, so the person representing the country, the person whom the people decide to elect, they should have a decent choice. Not some candidate that people know little about, or some person chosen by a mainstream political party. The constitution really needs to be changed.
Malachy, we're a month away from actually voting for a president here.
You have time to get
to know them. I mean, have you ever spoiled a vote in the past?
Never.
But you feel that strongly about it now?
Yes, I do. As a protest, I may not spoil it. If I think there's a very strong front contender. I will spoil it if there's a very strong front contender. If it's neck and neck, then I will spoil it.
If it's neck and neck, you'll spoil it. Explain that to me, Malachy.
My vote. Well, the basic issue is if it's a strong lead for one particular candidate, then, you know, there's little point in me voting. You know, one vote's not going to make a difference.
But isn't that the whole point of democracy and voting in elections? One vote can make a difference.
It's a fair point that you're making there. But, okay, you're right on that. But
It doesn't matter if I'm right. I'm just wondering, you sound passionate about voting, Malachy. It seems a shame for you not to do it this time around, but such is your annoyance here.
I might vote for a particular candidate, yes, I might. I haven't quite made up my mind yet about which candidate I'll select.
And we'll leave that to you, Malachy, but do you think there will be more people out there less inclined to vote now without the choice or without more...
Yes.
More debate, more people in the field.
Yes, I do. I think it has diminished interest in the presidency as an institution, and as an important institution. I think we should keep it. We have an individual who represents the country, and they're also a commander in chief of the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I stand on it, John.
Thanks very much, Malachy. Stay with us, Tommy. Good afternoon to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, John.
How do you feel about it?
Well, to be honest with you now, like Malachy, I feel very strongly about it. I've been following this more intensely the last few days about Maria Steen, and it was looking yesterday that she might get on the ballot. And I thought, well, that's great, because I think three candidates is far too little. And the fact of Maria Steen kind of coming from outside the main political parties, you know, it gives people choice. So I was following it this morning, and she got up to 18 votes, and then that was it. And when I heard it, I'll be honest with you now, I was actually angry, because she came so close, and all she needed was two more people, and you know, those people didn't have to vote for her, but literally just to give her the chance. Like I've seen Maria Steen in various campaigns over the years, and I'll be honest with you now, I wouldn't agree with every single thing that she stands for, but I mean, she certainly has the courage of her convictions. And I saw her on the 6-1 news last night, and she must have been under fierce pressure at that stage. But I mean, she came across as very personable, and I was thinking to myself, I could definitely see her as president, and she would represent us. And Maliki said there about spoiling his vote. I was actually talking to him, now this is before we knew what was going to happen, but okay. I was talking to a friend of mine at the weekend, and that whole thing came up about spoiling the vote. And I've been voting for 40 years, over 40 years, and I never miss an election or a referendum, local or national, and I've never spoiled my vote. But I'm genuinely, I haven't my mind made up now, because it's still a bit raw for me, but I'm genuinely thinking of spoiling my vote.
And you're saying that this is something that you, Tommy and Maliki and your friends are actively talking about, spoiling votes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about it is, we were just, myself and my friend were talking at the weekend, and I'm not sure, I think it was my friend that mentioned about spoiling her vote, and I was actually, that had been on my mind. And, you know, so like, I've never done this before, because I believe in democracy. But my problem is that the system of somebody from outside the main political parties trying to get on as a presidential candidate, I believe the system is flawed and it's unfair, because we saw it with Garrett Sheridan as well. And now I don't really know much about Garrett Sheridan, but he's a young man. And I thought to myself, somebody like him would have an appeal towards younger voters, and I thought, well, that'd be great, you know, let him get on the ballot paper. Same with Maria Steen, and you know, give people a choice. Now, Maria Steen, as we know, is very conservative, and in lots of ways I probably would be conservative in certain ways, and I wouldn't be in other ways, but there are a whole cohort of people that would actually agree wholeheartedly with Maria Steen, and now they're disenfranchised, mm-hmm. the way I see it.
And Tommy, because you mentioned the local authorities and the other candidates who tried to get through there, including Gareth Sheridan, well, we saw that only a very small number of local authorities nominated anyone at all, and that route seemed to be closed to many because of instructions coming from Fine Gael, perhaps advice or less rigid instructions coming from Fianna Fáil. Do you think that's why you feel a little bit more angry about it? Because of there being, it would appear, little chance of an independent or someone outside of established politics getting into this race?
Yeah, well, you see, that's the problem. In one way, I don't have a major problem with Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, you know, telling their councillors to vote for their candidate or to even block another candidate. That's democracy. But when you have councils that will say Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have a majority on it, well, those councils are out straight away. So it kind of makes a bit of a joke of the whole thing that somebody can come through the county council route, you know, because so many of those councils, they're out of bounds already. So you're kind of depending on independence. And I know a few party councillors sort of broke ranks, mm-hmm. which was very admirable of them, you know. So like the whole process is flawed in my view. And the way I see it, it's strange really that I've kind of got so worked up over this really since I heard that Maria Steen didn't get on the ballot. You know, that like why should I, a very strong believer in democracy and voting and everything, you know, why should I take part in a system or in a vote if I believe the whole thing behind it is as I said, flawed and unfair?
It's, you know, only so, in the last while that Maria Steen has conceded defeat and realised the inevitable here, that she wasn't going to make it, that she was two votes short. Let's have a quick listen to what she had to say about the process.
The response from the public in recent days confirms the hunger that there is for an alternative candidate. Sadly, that hunger will now go unsatisfied. Rarely has the political consensus seemed more oppressive or detached from the wishes and desires of the public.
Strong words from Maria Steen there. Rosari, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
What do you think of what's happened this afternoon and what Maria Steen had to say there?
Well, I feel exactly the same as their previous two callers there. I just feel that Maria Steen has been denied a place on the ballot and we have been denied the choice to vote for her or for somebody. And like with only three candidates now, there's just not enough choice. And it looks like that the political parties have manipulated this and they have made a choice for us. And that's not democratic, you know. I think in Fianna Fáil and like the two big parties, there has to be more people in there that think like, say, I do. And I'm not being represented. Like, I don't have a choice, you know.
But isn't this like a very transparent process, Rosari? The big political parties are obviously going to back the candidate that they're backing. And then we've seen other parties come out in support of others as well. They obviously don't want to back anyone else but their own candidates or their own candidates of choice.
Yeah, because Micheál Martin, etc. have made the choice and for them. And like I read somewhere, I think it was in the Examiner, that Micheál Martin said that, you know, that they basically that they can't break ranks with the party with the way they think. So I'm actually annoyed now. And, you know, I've always used my vote, always. And I don't know if I will vote now, because who am I going to vote for? There's nobody that represents me.
Well, is it too early to say that, Rosari? There's a whole month to look at three candidates in place, to listen to the radio or to watch debates and to consider why you should give them their vote, your vote.
Well, it's a great pity that we don't have someone like Maria Steen in there as well.
You were a supporter of Maria Steen, were you?
I am, yes, yeah.
And do you think we could have too many candidates in an election? There were six last time round. Do you think maybe it could be more focused this time round?
Well, you know, as the time goes on, it does kind of narrow down to a few. But like with three now, it's, you know, I don't think it's enough.
And as a supporter of Maria Steen, do you think she was too late maybe getting involved in the process here? Because there was this last dash run around to councils around the country only in the last couple of weeks. And then this down to the wire search for Oireachtas members to back her. It was a little bit too late, perhaps. And maybe people might say the same of other candidates who tried to get through the council route. Should they have set out their stalls a long time ago?
I don't know. But that's not the point now. The point is that she's not on the ballot paper now. And none of the political parties, except for Aontua, they backed her. But the main parties have kind of manipulated this. That's what I think. And the presidential position is not, you know, it's supposed to be above politics.
What impact do you think it'll have? Sorry, Rosari, go on.
I think, like, there's an awful lot of people absolutely fed up with politicians waffling, you know, and I've just made my point and I don't want to get into an argument.
That's okay. There's no argument, you know, no.
But I know there are lots of other people who think like me, you know, and think like Maria Steen as well. And we just don't have anybody up there to represent us, you know. Anyway, that's my point. And thank you very much.
Oh, Rosari, thanks very much for talking to us on Liveline as well. 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch. It's 0818715815 for your calls. Tommy Kelly, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John. Good afternoon.
Thanks very much to so many people getting in touch on this. Tell me how you feel.
Right, and thank you for the opportunity. I feel exactly the same as the previous speakers, but I would like to make a national appeal in relation to that. When people are saying, as some of your speakers have said, that they may not vote or they'll spoil their vote, I think you can still vote for Maria Steen or you can still vote for Gareth Sheridan, and that's what I intend to do. I intend, as a protest, to vote to put in either Maria Steen or Gareth Sheridan on the ballot paper. I know it'll be spoiled, but if enough people were to do that, you can still vote for Maria Steen and you can still vote for Gareth Sheridan. So I would appeal to people, rather than just going in and scratching through the ballot paper and spoiling the vote, that they would put one or two of those names on the ballot paper. Albeit it would be spoiled, but you could make a huge point if enough people were to do it.
I was just going to say, because with respect, Tommy, it would be the same outcome as a spoiled vote, wouldn't it? Would it make much difference as to whether you wrote down names or scratched through it, as you said? Because, look, we're all encouraged to use our vote to have our say, aren't we?
We are encouraged to use our vote, but then when people like the Marie Steen supporters try to use their vote, the elitist parties shut them out. They don't want the great unwashed like ourselves to have a voice really at all.
The great
unwashed.
They want unwashed.
To keep it within the elite. Yes, that's I believe how they look at the ordinary punter. He's just the great unwashed. Just put forward two or three candidates and let them pick from one of them and shut out everybody else.
Maria Steen spoke about an elite clique. She said there it was an elite clique in politics there. You agree with that, obviously, Tommy?
Absolutely, yeah. And I would appeal once again, if you're going to spoil your vote, put Marie Steen's name on the ballot paper or Gareth Sheridan. At least if enough people were to do that, it might send some kind of a message to the powers that be, that maybe they ought to look at changing this. I think it's disgraceful.
I don't know, Tommy, that's your view. Let's hear from a few other people as well, because many more people do want to exercise their right to be heard here, certainly on Liveline, and I look forward to hearing from more of them. Back in just a moment, 51551 for your texts.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And it's John Cook with you to 3-5-1-5-5-1 if you want to get in touch. Cliona, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, John.
Tell us why you got in touch.
Now, could I? I did indeed, and I am echoing what everybody else has said. I would like to say, you know, we have had, since the election of Mary Robinson, and then our wonderful, and I'm going to get this wrong, I know, Mary McAleese. No, I did. And, of course, Michael Gee. It is very disappointing to see such a lackluster, nothing personal, but three candidates. You know, is there nobody more inspiring that we can find in our country to represent us as president?
Well, give them a chance, Cliona, surely. There's a month to go. We have to find out about what they have to say.
But three of them. And as I said, I don't want to be personal. I'm sure they're all wonderful people. But I don't know much about, well, obviously I would know about Heather Humphreys and good luck, but, you know, she's already been a minister and a very effective.
Okay.
The other gentleman, okay. I can't even think of his surname.
Okay, Jim, well, we're not talking about all of the candidates today, but they're Jim Gavin and Catherine Connolly, but you wanted more of them. Cliona, did you know that when Mary Robinson was elected, there were three candidates running in that election?
Well, I do, but it happened to be a different, how can I put it, quality of candidate, Brian Lenihan. Now, we don't want to get into discussions about all
that. We can't rewrite history either.
Right. But I just think it's a very lackluster selection. And I think one of the problems may be that people are afraid to put themselves forward with the terrible personal attacks that do happen. Remember when David Norris, Senator David Norris, went forward and with this dreadful...
Okay, we're not going to rehash old elections here because we have to focus on the one that's coming. But you're making a really interesting point, Cliona. You think people are afraid to run for elections. Earlier on, it was Malachy who said people have lost interest. Well, you think they're afraid to run?
Well, I think that the whole prevalence of social media and TikTok and none of those of which I'm on, I might say, are put awful lot of people. They don't want to expose themselves. So, you know, we've seen already the whole climate in Ireland has changed for the worse, sadly. When you see politicians' families being attacked and all these anonymous, horrible people, you know, threatening them with physical violence.
It's a good point, Cliona. 51551 for your texts. Lots more people to get in on this as well. Arthur, good afternoon to you as well.
Dear Grit, gonna start to. I would like to say, much quicker in English than in Irish, unfortunately.
Carcalore.
the whole political system, the democratic system, has been hijacked by two main parties.
Hijacked.
Very
democracy strong words.
Has been hijacked. Yeah, democracy, in my mind, has been hijacked by the two main parties. Couldn't somebody, I'm not mainly involved in the GAA, and I had to know who he was when they put their person forward. I did know Heather Humphreys from previous situations.
Okay.
Catherine Connolly, I knew the name. And the gentleman from America who decided to give up his business and come back and go for it and put his name forward and got barely there. And Maria Steen, barely there. Shame on the major political parties who kiboshed their members not to be able to put a signature on somebody else. To give me a choice. I've only a choice of three, and I should have had a choice of some more than that.
But can you have too many, Arthur? And I wonder how this will impact on your vote. Will it sway what's going to happen for you now or your interest in the campaign?
How many too manys were in North Tipperary when I voted in the last election? There were 21, I think, on some ballot papers for the Oireachtas. And now we have the president only for three, and we don't have a choice.
Well, we're talking about a very high office here.
Yeah, but at the high office, there are lots of people who could have been promoted, and Maria Steen, whatever she did, would have been promoted, and maybe she might have got some finance to bring her to that position or not bring her to the second position. But I have a difficulty now in voting. I wouldn't spoil my vote, but I have a difficulty in voting because I've only a choice of three. And I'm not involved in the GAA, so why would I go for the GAA man? Why would I go Fine Gael person, because I'm not a Fine Gael or a Fianna Fáil person or a Labour person.
Okay, we'll leave it up to you how you vote, but you are going to vote, Arthur, are you?
Oh, well, relations of my wife went out in 1916 to bring us our democracy to the position it is now, and it's been usurped by the politicians. That's the way I feel.
Regarding spoiled votes... Sorry, Arthur, go on.
Pardon? And the gentleman who said putting the name on, the name of somebody who didn't get through, could bring a position to the next lot of politicians to decide that the situation needs to be broadened out to allow those who would desire to be there, because it's my right as an over 35 person, a citizen of Ireland, to put my name forward. I wouldn't have a chance, but it's my right to be able to do it under the Constitution. Mm-hmm. As I read it.
Okay.
So why couldn't somebody else be allowed? Do you have to be a member of the Dáil or a member of the GAA or a member of the major political parties? That's my point. And hijacked it. And in North Tipperary, in the last election and the previous election, two politicians came to my door and I wasn't arguing with them. I said, what do you think about? And they had nothing to think about, whatever the going thing was in the headlines of the papers that week. So, you know, are they all dumb there? Are they all afraid to not take their own stance and decide to vote? Look at the people who went outside the political parties and did something or were put outside the political parties. I think they should have been brave enough. People should have been brave enough to do that and take the cash of their parties.
Okay.
And 6 months later,
a lot of people would agree with you, Arthur. Some would disagree. But I think a lot of people as well would remind, when you're talking about history there as well, the right to vote means as well and why it's so important too. Fiona Kennedy, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon to you.
Fiona, what do you think?
Well, like many of your speakers before, I too will be spoiling my vote. It's not a decision I take lightly, but it's a decision I take seriously. I would be writing Maria Steen's name on the ballot and I will be casting a vote for her. I know that vote will be spoiled, but I see it as an opportunity to send a very clear message to the government about what the people wanted. I just feel they were petrified of her and I feel they were right to be, because I feel she had a real chance at winning it. There appears to have been a really concerted effort to keep her name off the ballot, and there's a very real anger out there now amongst the public about it. I feel democracy was not served in this whole shambles.
You'd spoil your vote, though. Have you done that before, Fiona?
I've never done that before, and I have travelled distances to get back to base to cast my vote in every... I've never missed an election that I've been in the country for. I take this very, very seriously, but I think that there's a real anger amongst the Irish people now over a whole range of issues. And they've really... I think they've scored a what's it called? Is it called a Pyrrhic victory, whatever that term is, on this one? I think they've won this, but I think the damage they've done to themselves is serious, particularly the independents.
We're only going to see how this campaign unfolds, of course, in the coming month, because the campaign is only getting underway this afternoon. Thank you, Fiona. And I did. Well, the point I was trying to get in about the spoiled votes was that on Commission Thaukan, the Electoral Commission told us that in the last European and local elections, there was 108,488 spoilt or ineligible votes. And that number of votes is the equivalent of the full capacity of Croke Park Stadium, or it's the equivalent of the combined population of Drogheda, Dundalk and Sligo. So would you want that many people's votes not to be heard? I'm interested in your thoughts, as always. 51551 or 0818 715 815. Gerard, what do you think?
Yes, I'm listening to your program there. I broadly would agree with all of the speakers that have been there. I think it's a very, very sad day for democracy in this country. This is a very fine woman who had the capacity to... hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, sorry. Who had capacity to represent this country very, very well, both internally and externally. And I think probably because of where she comes from on the political spectrum, that was denied to her. She represents the feelings of an awful lot of people in this country. And I hadn't thought about the spoiling of the vote thing until now. But I tell you what, I'll be giving it very serious thought. It's very sad. It's very sad for democracy. And I think there's a number of TDs in the Dáil and senators in the Oireachtas overall that need to look at themselves very hard in the mirror today and look away in shame.
Was she too late to the race, though, Gerard? And maybe other independent candidates only emerging in the last few weeks, when we've known for a long time that Michael D. Higgins will be coming to the end of his term?
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. But having said all that, she ran it very close. I mean, with a short space of time, I don't know Maria Steen very well, but from what I've seen of her in recent weeks, she's articulate, she's smart. She would represent this country fantastically. Maybe she did leave us a little bit late, but maybe she didn't have the backing, you know, the financial backing to launch a campaign so soon. But having said that, there was certainly plenty of people who need to look themselves seriously in the mirror and think, boy, did I make a mistake here? Because I think as this rolls on, the Irish people are not morons. They'll have a look at this, and I think you said something, John, there about 108,000 spoiled votes. I think they may be able to treble or quadruple that when this is over.
Well, I'm saying that's a lot of voices not heard, perhaps. Yeah. Ruth, I want to hear your voice on this as well. Ruth, what do you think?
Well, I'm truly trying to be calm about this, but the idea of people spoiling their votes. When we fought so hard to become a republic, and that they will go into a polling booth and they'll spoil their votes. You know, do they realise how precious it is when you think of South Africa and people queuing in the heat for 13, 14 hours for the first chance to vote? Nelson Mandela having the first vote in his lifetime in his 70s, and out of a sense of petulance and a failure to look at the issue. Now I go on to Maria Steen. If Maria Steen feels so strongly that she represents the unheard section of Irish society, and I understand that she's a very articulate campaigner for her issues, why was she not on the trail a year ago? Why was she not going on the hustings? Mary Robinson, our first female president, was out there quietly getting on, getting to meet people down the country. The first vote in for her was from the Aran Islands, I think. It was one of the islands, sorry, maybe it wasn't the Aran. She had gone to the places. You can't just stand in a podium and speak in general terms about what you represent. You actually have to have met the people who are saying that they're not being represented.
Ruth, thanks very much for your point on that as well. Mary Robinson, people would argue as well, had the backing of an established political party too as well. But I'm very interested in all your views on this. And obviously, many people feel very strongly today. 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
I would just like to say, as someone who enjoys a good election and has covered local, national and presidential elections and referendums for over two decades on radio, I would like to encourage you to go and vote and have your say, because otherwise, sure, we can't be given out. Have your say and do go and vote would be my suggestion, because that's what we're all about here on Liveline. 0818 715 815. You can have your say on anything at all. Dara Kiernan, good afternoon to you.
John, how are you keeping?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I'm not too bad at all. I'm not too bad. I'm absolutely exhausted, and that'll probably explain the reason we're about to talk.
What age were you, Dara, when you became a dad?
I turned 50 in June 2020, and my son came along 6 weeks later.
Oh, very good.
I just turned 50. Yeah, and it was the first time as well. So it's our one and only, our only one and only lad.
So let's get this right. You're a 55-year-old with a 5-year-old now. How's life?
Tiring. surprise. I'm certainly not as young as I thought I would be. But you know, it's great. It's just fantastic. And you know, like we went through 6 rounds of IVF, and I won't tell you the horror stories. But he finally came along. We went to Barcelona. We went to an IVF clinic in Barcelona. And first time there, along he came, and it was absolutely fantastic, you know. So he a long time coming, but yeah, it's you know, as most people know, and most people my age are well past this type of experience, but it's just a fantastic game changer. It's but and it's tiring, yeah.
sure, parenting is tiring in general, anyway, whatever age you are. But was he everything you'd hoped for, Ethan, and more? Or have there been, there's always surprises, isn't there, along the way?
Look, he tests us like every child does, you know, but he is absolutely everything. I mean, we went down the road for 7 years trying to find him, I suppose. And then when we got him, it was just, it was fantastic. Now, he came along in COVID. So it was a whole different experience. And obviously, I couldn't get in for any of the scans, and I was there for the birth, but then I wasn't allowed to come back in again.
Right.
But you forget all that stuff, you know, and we forget all the horror stories that we went through. When he arrives, that's just gone. All that's in the past. And he's fantastic. And he keeps us on our toes. I've lost about 2 stone in weight since he came along, because...
There you
just
go.
Never stop moving. It's brilliant. It's a great time to do it.
That is brilliant. 51551 of the listeners want to get in touch, because I was asking them earlier on what they thought of the super vet Noel Fitzpatrick's comments that he might like to settle down and start a family at the age of 57, nearly 58. He now feels emotionally ready and mature enough to have a child at nearly 58, he says. What do you think of that, Dara? And do you think people maybe jump to conclusions if they hear about older parents or what?
Well, I also note in his piece he also says that he's of the age and he's ready to find himself a 30-year-old wife. So I mean, a 57-year-old wasn't a 30-year-old wife. But yeah, look, I mean, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, when I probably would be similar to him. If I had my son when I was 30, I probably wasn't right, and I wasn't prepared. I wouldn't have been prepared and ready for it. Over the years now, we've become just a lot more secure. We're financially good. We have our house. We're not having to struggle to bring up Ethan. It's a lot easier for us. I think, you know, there's a cap on it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
People who are in there. you know, in their 60s and 70s, perhaps, and I don't want to go against older people, but there has to be a cap, because you have to be present. You have to be around. I mean, one good thing about us is we don't have any other distractions like we would have had when we were in our 30s, you know, heading out to the pub or going to this or going to that. We don't really have any of that now at this age. And so all of our attention is on Ethan. And it's great.
And you make some great points, yeah. Dara, there. I'm sure we'd all like to have our finances in order and our forever home and all that. It's a luxury a lot of people wouldn't have, and particularly mothers, I'm thinking out there as well in terms of age. But it's something you feel that you are better prepared for because of being older.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've just got so much more life experience now. Now, you know, if we had been lucky, we would have had Ethan, you know, 10 years previously, if we'd been lucky. So our circumstances was kind of beyond our control. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, we've been looking for so long to find him as such. We got him. We were late. It just happened to be that. But we, you know, we don't have to worry about some of the worries that younger people have. It's certainly when you think about trying to get on the property ladder now and and the expense of everything nowadays. Those days for us are kind of behind us. We're not trying to get us move ourselves up the career ladder. We are where we are now, and I don't think that's going to change in the near future. So there's no pressure. There's no pressure like that on us. It's at this age, once we can remain fit and once we can remain healthy and be able to spend good quality time with them, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. If you get much older, I think the kid loses out, you know, if you can't give him that attention.
Do you worry about that, Dara? Do you worry about being an older dad when Ethan is a teenager now or a young adult?
I often laugh about, when it's time for him to have his first pint, he'll have to buy it because I'll be on the pension because I won't have the money. But no, not really. I mean, you know, teenager, I'll be in my 60s. Hopefully I'll continue to remain fit. He certainly keeps me fit. There's no question about that. I reckon if he was a lot older now and if I had had him a lot younger, now I'd be in my 50s and probably eating junk and going out and doing all those type of things, and I probably wouldn't be as fit as I am now, you know. So he's my trainer, my personal
I feel like
trainer.
You're watching me, Dara. Any embarrassing moments trying to keep up with Ethan?
Oh God, look, I mean, even just people who bump into you. We live down in Wexford and we were on Cahor Beach a few years ago, and you know those shoulder seats for kids, those the kind of fixed shoulder seats, I can't think of what they're called.
I do.
You know those things, and we had him on one, and we met another couple with a kid about Ethan's age, and they were about the same age as us, and they were asking us about the seat and where we got it, and we just told them, and as we were about to go away, the man just said, "Isn't it wonderful just getting out to spend time with the grandkids, isn't it?" And we said, "Oh no, he's ours. He's our son." Right. And the man's wife gave him such a stare; they were mortified. But we get, you get that when you talk to parents at the gates as well. You know, they might just talk about certain music or certain things like that. And I've never heard of it.
And Dara, I'm laughing there, but I'm just wondering: is that hurtful to you if somebody got that wrong there? Because I don't mean to make light of it.
Not at all. No, not at all. I mean, it's a natural assumption. You know, when you see somebody in their 50s, and I mean, I don't look 30, so when you see someone in their 50s with a child, you just imagine, you just assume that it's their grandchild. So absolutely not. No, not at all. It's great to have them, and I don't, you know, none of that type of stuff will bother me at all.
Dara, I got to let you go because I think you have a school run. You're always kept on your toes by a five-year-old. Any tips finally for the super vet or anyone else out there who's an older parent or thinking that it won't happen for them until they're older?
Look, just keep trying. If it's not going to happen, you know, if you feel it won't happen for you, just keep trying. It's so worth it. You know, it's for health reasons alone. It is fantastic. But secondly, it's like I'm in my 50s and I'm playing with Lego. It's just ridiculous and it's fantastic. You know, I'm playing with cars and things that I never thought that I would ever do again. It's wonderful. You know, so I think you just, but But just be careful. You know, you need to keep yourself in good shape because they never let up. They never let up.
Okay, back to the Lego or the Minecraft there or whatever, Dara. Long may it continue. Thanks.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks very much for joining us on Liveline. 51551.
On RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
The presidential election campaign has brought the Irish language into sharp focus as well. As we hear, there won't be any debates as Scaoilge ahead of the race for Áras an Uachtaráin. Question is, how are we teaching Irish in Ireland? Why do so few of us, I suppose, relatively speaking, feel fluent or lifa as Scaoilge? And what's happening in our schools as well in the way we teach the language? Because more than 60,000 post-primary students got exemptions from studying Irish in the past academic year, the largest number ever. Sean de Bruin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
And Tá Fáilte Ró, thanks very much for joining us on Liveline this afternoon. Will you just explain for anyone who doesn't know, Sean, what the Irish exemption is or what's involved in the process?
Yeah, there's a number of students who can seek exemption, and there are certain criteria laid down to get the exemption. But there's one element of this whole process whereby the principal has a key role in deciding whether or not a student gets the exemption. And I'm not so sure this is a very good way to go, because it puts principals possibly at loggerheads with parents whom they may know very well. They may be their neighbours. And there may be a slight difference between the way one principal and another would actually allocate or give the exemption to a student.
Okay.
So there's a significant increase of over 60,000 pupils, which is quite a lot. Now, we know from the history of teaching Gaeilge, it has certain legacy issues. There's parental attitudes and so on, and a certain amount of negativity. While that may be true, yet I think that if Gaeilge is taught well, pupils can learn it, both in primary and in second level. But students find a difficulty with lots of subjects, for example, with Gaeilge, as I've mentioned, but also with mathematics. Mm-hmm. And yet we have nobody clamouring for an exemption in mathematics. Why Gaeilge is the issue I would raise. And I do accept that some students may have a difficulty with learning languages. And the research shows that a number of people who've gotten exemptions in Gaeilge are studying other languages. So I think there's an issue to be explored on that one there.
Mm-hmm. Can I bring you back, Sean, to the process you were talking about there with school principals? So from what you say, you apply to the school principal for the exemption for your son or daughter in school. At what age, or does it vary, or what happens in practice?
No, it varies really, and even primary school pupils get exemption from Gaeilge as well, so it can happen at any stage. And we do accept that pupils come into the system from countries outside of the state who may have known Gaeilge at a later stage in life. But we've seen that people from other countries who come to this country in primary school, they're exceptionally proficient in Gaeilge. So it's not an issue that people cannot learn the language, but some may have a difficulty. And I think getting complete exemption takes you completely out of the loop. For example, there's more to the Irish language than simply language only. With the culture, with the games, with the music, with the drama, all of that. So if you give somebody complete exemption in the second level, they're completely out of the loop. And I'm not so sure that is the best thing to do. Yet we have a number of these students, as I say, who have exemption on Gaeilge, but are taking other languages.
Mm-hmm.
And now as well, there's a new initiative which was announced there yesterday by the Minister McEntee about modern foreign languages in primary schools. And of course, the more languages the children know, the better. There's no doubt about that. But it'll be interesting to see how many students now will be looking for exemption from any of these new modern languages. Now, the term foreign, I'm not so sure. I'm not all that at ease with the word foreign. Foreign to whom? That's a debate for another day. But one worry I would have would be with the increasing number of exemptions that now it's been more normalised. And I know students, if they have a difficulty with something, if there's an easy way out, they will opt for it. Now, with the modern foreign languages, I just wonder this. Will parents say, look, it's far better for my son or daughter to invest their time in a modern foreign language, whatever language that may be, at the expense of Gaeilge? I hope that doesn't happen, but I would have a fear. And of course, primary school teachers who are very busy people, more of their time will now have to be dedicated to this. So that is a worry. I hope we're not moving towards a day where Gaeilge becomes optional. That's the biggest worry I would have at the end of the day.
Okay.
But the numbers are increasing as the research shows.
Sean, there's lots in what you're saying, because you're mentioning the new primary school curriculum that's to come in next year. And other languages being taught from fifth and sixth class, we understand, is the plan there. Again, I just want to bring you back a little bit, because you mentioned children coming in from other countries. I'm thinking we've got so many nationalities in our country as well, and people who would come in where English may not be their first language. Perhaps they would have a case then, as you're saying, for an exemption from learning Irish. Not that they couldn't do it, but that might be one criteria, is it? Can you give us an example of what other criteria are involved, or what other reasons school principals are given for the Irish exemptions?
I'm not really, okay, so I'm a primary school teacher and work in the College of Education. I'm not really with the details of the exact minutiae of it, but the principal has a key role to play in deciding whether the department lay out certain conditions, but also the principal has a key role to play in that. And I think a lot of the principals are very uneasy about that sort of power being vested in them for obvious reasons. And I think that that's something that needs to be looked at in terms of consistency alone, whether or not a pupil should get exemption. But maybe there should be consideration given to partial exemption, that you're not simply completely out of the loop, that you may have difficulty with the language, but you may have an interest in the sport, you may have an interest in the games, you may have an interest in, we'll say, the drama or the songs or the poetry or whatever. So it is a concern that the numbers are that big, really. I must say it is a real concern, and they're growing gradually. But as you mentioned, pupils coming from other nationalities, I think a lot of those who come into our primary schools are exceptionally proficient at Gaeilge, actually very good. And you talk to any school principal who will get a child in maybe in infants or first or second class, they adapt quite well and they're quite proficient in Gaeilge. So I think that giving those a blanket exemption, depending on the age they come, if a pupil comes into a second level school at 17, that's completely different to somebody coming in at a 5 or 6 year old coming into the school system.
We've been talking in recent days, Sean, about a lot of children with additional needs and people who might have difficulties in learning. Would that be a criteria, or you're not sure exactly what other criteria principals are allowed to consider?
It would be a criteria, but why does this apply solely to Gaeilge? How come in mathematics or English or something else, how come these difficulties are not manifesting itself with a request for an exemption in mathematics or in English or whatever? That's the issue that I would have.
Well, I'm sure lots of parents would have views on this. 51551 if you want to get in touch with the programme as well. They might be pointing out, though, that if their children are having difficulties in learning in general, or maybe difficulties in communicating in general, that they want to focus on them being able to communicate very well in the language they're going to use in everyday life, which is English in this country.
Yeah, that is true, but not for everybody, though. It's not for everybody. I do appreciate that if they have learning difficulties, of course, every sympathy and every facility must be put at their disposal, really, to make their time in school more enjoyable and profitable. There's no doubt about that.
What would be a better system, in your opinion, Sean, if you're saying you don't think this should all be on the principals, and maybe the principals would agree with you? I wonder what goes on, because parents are probably asking the principal, do you think the principals are coming under undue pressure in this circumstance sometimes? Yeah.
I would think they probably are. What I would have a centralised system that would be simply neutral of the schools, people who are experts in the field. And you need expert people to decide if somebody has a linguistic problem or needs an exemption from a language. Experts that would apply the rules fairly. Now, not suggest that principals don't apply the rules very fairly. Of course they do. But I think it would be more consistent if you had an independent system, independent of the principal, because I think it is putting undue pressure on the principal. And I'm sure if the principal needs have input into it and the school, that would be very welcome also. But that's the system I would have more independent than it currently is.
Does it cause trouble between parents and principals, do you think?
There would be an element of that, yes. And it could happen that you may have your neighbour or somebody you know very well looking for an exemption, and you may feel under sort of some moral pressure to acquiesce to that request, where maybe it may or may not be the right decision to make. So I would take that sort of that element out of the equation if possible.
And when you say, forgive me here now, but when you say centralised system, Sean, you might put the fear of God into parents out there who are thinking, well, I'm waiting long enough for my applications for assessments and reports and everything else in centralised systems. Would that not make it a much more drawn out and distant process from parents compared to how they can just talk to the principal of their own school?
Yeah, I don't think so, really. I don't think so. The criteria laid down, let them apply those, but take the principle, I think, out broadly out of that equation would be what I would be suggesting.
But I'm do you sure mean one central body in Ireland? Sorry to cut across you, Sean. One central body in Ireland where the parents of children in every school across the country has to make an application?
Not really, no. It doesn't. It could be localised, but the expertise would be in each board. You could have a localised system, say, for a town or as a region or whatever, and like the education centres or whatever, you could have those, and you have independent people on it with knowledge of the issue at stake, rather than including putting the pressure on the principal to actually decide whether or not John Cook should be deserving of an exemption from Gaelic or not.
Okay.
I think it would be slightly more independent, I would think. That would be my suggestion.
Thanks for the suggestion, Sean. Stay with us. Paul Crone is Director of the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
And Tá Fáilte wrote as well to you. Thanks for joining us on Liveline. Is there hostility, is there trouble between parents and principals over these Irish language exemptions at schools?
In some cases, there are troubles. They're very strained meetings and very strongly expressed differences of opinion. Because all of these schools are well used to circulars, and circulars are like the law in school. So the circular is very clear on the criteria for an exemption from Irish. But there can sometimes be a difference of interpretation from a parent, or particularly where a child doesn't meet the criteria, yet the parent is able to get some supporting evidence from a medical professional or a psychologist, but they still don't meet the criteria. And that leads to some very difficult conversations among principals and parents. And parents don't fully understand that the principal has to meet this criteria to grant the exemption. And it creates difficulties in some schools.
Does the principal have the final word on this, Paul, or can it be appealed?
There is an appeal. No, there is an appeal process to the Department of Education, but the appeal process is a review of the documentation. So the principal is very unlikely to try to go outside of the the agreed criteria, because on appeal it will be overturned. But at the same time, they come under ferocious pressure in that they would know the parents. The principal's job is really to create the positive atmosphere, the positive learning environment in the school. So they would have positive relationships with the parents, with staff, with students. But in particular, where a parent is advocating for their child, and you can understand why they would be advocating for their child, but they don't meet the criteria, it leads to difficulties.
And Paul, the criteria is very clear, you say. Is it clear to explain to our listeners now?
Yes, it is. The first one really is if a child came into Ireland older than the age of 12, if they're younger than 12, it's expected that they would take up Irish. So that's very clear. And we've had a large influx of students over the age of 12 into Ireland.
And what else? Because we were trying to establish what the other criteria were.
No, there's two other criteria. The second one is where a student would have a particular literacy difficulty that was diagnosed, and they're diagnosed as operating below the 10th percentile. So they would have very significant additional needs and a very significant and diagnosed learning difficulty. The third one is where a student may have multiple and persistent issues that impact on their engagement with their learning and engagement in school. And the school has to have identified this. They have to have a written plan in place, and that plan has to be implemented for 2 years, and the evidence available to show that there is no improvement and the withdrawal from the study of Irish will be a benefit to the students. Now, that's the one where that gets the ambiguous piece.
Okay.
But the 2 years is very clearly in the circular.
Well, thanks for explaining that to us, Paul. Is there a better solution or a better system in your view for school principals and for parents for children?
Well, our conference last year, there was a motion put forward that it should be withdrawn from principals, as it used to be. It was given to principals in 2019. So the principal will be responsible for collecting all of the information. And if they felt that the person met the criteria, they would submit the documentation for approval centrally. And then the exemption from Irish would be granted centrally. So that was removed in 2019. And since then, I suppose principals have identified that this, in a small number of cases, is a particularly difficult issue. So our members would like it to go back to central.
To go back to a central system is what you want as well.
Yeah.
51551. Sorry, go on, Paul.
So the principal and the team, the student support team in the school, are very happy to do the work and work with the student and on a student support file. But it just offers that little bit of protection for the relationship between the principal and the parent.
51551, if listeners want to get in touch with us on this. Conor Lynch is on the line. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hello, John.
You're listening to what Sean and Paul are saying. I'm very well, thanks for joining us. What do you think?
Well, the general topic makes sense for me, to me, to have a centralised administration hub, we'll say. But slightly off the topic, I'm a firm believer that there's a glaring omission in recent years in the conversation around the success of our native tongue, our mother tongue. And having spent close to 40 years in education, and trying to promote and teach and encourage pupils and parents to engage, let's say, positively with the language, something has struck me in recent years since I retired, and that is the fact that there's an omission between birth and the age of the child attending primary school or even preschool, where, in my experience, and parents are busy and parents are human, they can't do everything, but there's little or nothing done in the kitchen to promote engagement with the language. Now, John, in my experience, everything that's success-based in the school, in the relationship between the teacher and the child, the vast majority is predisposed towards a positive relationship, or anyway, a relationship with the parents or guardians in the kitchen. And it's just a very easy thing to do to, let's say, teach a small little 2.5-year-old, a 3-year-old, tabla, mala scolia, breakfast. Did you eat your breakfast? Are you going egg shul? However, the irony is, the expectation is there on teachers, primary school teachers, and therefore the burden is on teachers to click their fingers and to eradicate this 5-year gap, hole in the learning for these darlings, and to promote a tongue that's alien to them.
Okay.
And it mightn't be if parents were well disposed. Now, parents may be they may take the line that, well, I wasn't taught well to us and so-and-so beat me and whatnot. But we follow, let's say, our athletes, we follow the rugby, we follow the soccer, we follow our music. We love where we live.
Okay, you want us to follow our language too as well, Conor. It's a good point. It's an interesting point. Yeah, in the kitchen, Sakish Dean. You made the point very clear. And Gurumila Mahigut, I'm sure there's many parents out there say, I am doing it home in the kitchen. We do share the couple of focal. I'd love to know your thoughts. Liveline at rte.ie to Sean, to Paul and to Conor. Gurumila Mahigut, Galair, 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And the figures we were talking about there on the Irish language exemptions in schools are contained in a programme, TG Cahir Anocht. It's the Inuku TG Cahir Investigate series, Anocht, 9:30 tonight if you want to find out more, TG Cahir. Lots of you still getting in touch about the race for the Oras, which is officially underway with 3 candidates as of this afternoon. Annette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us. What do you think of the conversation so far and this 3-horse race, as it will be?
Well, John, I'm very disappointed. I'm very disappointed today in the whole system. In terms of, I feel as a voter, I am feel very disenfranchised at the moment. I really don't have a candidate who I can vote for at this election. I think that the field is very, very narrow. In previous presidential elections, we had a lot more candidates who may align, who have different, I suppose, alignments as such, whereas I don't feel that that is the case in this election. And for, like, I voted for 40 years and I'm very, very, I suppose, interested in politics. And when something comes up for an election or a referendum, I do my due diligence and I make sure that I'm voting for somebody that, you know, I feel that warrants my vote. I take it very, very seriously. I will say for the first time in 40 years, I will be going to the polling station on the 24th of October, and I will be writing Maria Steen on the ballot paper. And I'm sure there will be many, many, very many more who will do the same.
It's a spoiled vote, Inés.
It is, but every ballot on the day is counted. So we will then find out how many spoiled votes there are on the day. So it would be the first time I've ever done it, but that's my intention to do on the 24th of October.
And when I mentioned 108,000 spoilt and ineligible votes in the last European and local elections, the size of Croke Park, the population of Drogheda, Dundalk and Sligo, is that not a terrible shame?
It is a very terrible shame, absolutely. And normally it would be something that I would never even consider. But I'm actually that disenfranchised at the moment. I'm very, very delusioned about what I suppose the system is, because I feel that, like, you know, we have so many political representatives, both in the Dáil, in the Senate and on county councils, to find 20 people who could actually, I suppose, consider the wider public as such. So for me, it was a closed vote. It's very, 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 there's actually no transparency to a certain extent.
There is transparency. We knew what was going on here. We've heard from the parties as to what they're doing. Stay with us, Annette. Yeah. Niamh Cronin, good afternoon to you as well. Annette says she feels disenfranchised. No one for her to vote for. What do you think, Niamh?
Well, I mean, I'd be very sorry to hear that anybody in the state feels like that. I'm sure the state was never meant for that to happen, and that is terrible. But I suppose my point is that, one, there's transparency, and you have three candidates who are nominated by the three main parties in Dáil Éireann, and those parties have been democratically elected by the people. I mean, we had an election, I think, in November 24. Like, for, I'm a member of Fianna Fáil, and Fianna Fáil had a vote, and it was the Shannon, or the Oireachtas members, that voted in Jim Galvin, and that was a vote. Billy Kelleher went up for it, Jim Galvin, and Jim Galvin won on the day.
Well, we know, but Niamh, that you voted, mentioned you're in Fianna Fáil. Sorry to cut across you, but people would say you would say that, and there was many in Fianna Fáil, Billy Kelleher included, who wanted more of a say, not just a diktat coming from party headquarters or from their leader.
Sure, yeah, but I mean, I don't necessarily hope, and that's, to be fair, almost a separate conversation. This is about people saying that somebody like Maria Steen isn't being elected to go to run for president. And my point is that the political parties, that the three candidates are very much reflected in a democratically elected Dáil. That's the essential point.
And thank you very much for that point this afternoon. Niamh, who says she is a card-carrying member of Fianna Fáil, so we know how you're voting. She mentioned the candidate there. And of course, we know it's easy enough. There's two others, Heather Humphreys for Fine Gael and Catherine Connolly, independent.